What's it like to get out of bed and take on the left every day? Find out in our Liberty Nation Roundtable on The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are The Uprising, with Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president. Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
I have never met with Russians.
Putin is continuing to advance into
Korea.
Black Lives Matter, the Antifa movement, is interested in preserving the fabric of America.
This is The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. Tim Donner with you this week, but hardly alone, as in this episode of The Uprising, we gather together the brain trust of Liberty Nation, or most of it anyway, to talk about the challenges, joys, and travails of taking on the ever more vocal, in-your-face left wing of America, the Trump-hating, gun-grabbing, climate-change-loving, free-speech-opposing, Antifa-loving, deplorable-hating left. So with us are Liberty Nation Editorial Director Lisa Donner, Associate Editor Jim Feit, and Legal Correspondent and Constitutional Lawyer Scott Cosenza. Okay, start with you, Lisa. We still do the incorrect, I think it is these days. Ladies first around here, so we're going to let you go first. What do you as an editor do to both report and analyze the stories people want to know about and stay consistent with an anti-leftist agenda?
Well, it's not hard to stay anti-leftist. All you have to do is open up the Washington Post, the New York Times. And I will say from an editorial standpoint, keeping our team going is sort of like herding cats. I mean, we've got conservatives, we've got Republicans, we've got libertarians, we've got atheists, we've got Christians, we've got...
And throw some populists and nationalists in there along with it.
We've got independents. Everybody kind of has a mind of their own on Liberty Nation, that's for sure.
All right, well, Jim, how about you? You're the associate editor, and you edit the stuff our writers write all the time. How do you take yourself out of the story and edit fairly, even if you don't agree with what the writer's writing?
Well, that can be difficult. But ultimately, as the editor, I just have to look at whether or not it's technically correct. And factually correct. Other than that, I mean, it's liberty.
But certainly there got to be times where you're reading this stuff and go, this writer just misses the whole thing. How do you stop yourself from, I know that the editorial position is something that has a rather broad mandate to edit raw material into finished material.
Well, sometimes it looks like the writer has missed the point, and sometimes I think they get the point, and they don't really articulate the point right.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I don't take myself out of it. Sometimes I have to go back and go, oh, I can't change that. That's not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the trick is to make sure it's factually correct, make sure they're making their point, but not remove their voice from the article. I think that's the trick.
Yes. And every once in a while, a writer will make their point and spell everything correctly and get the gist of it all in one shot. You won't have much at all editing in the way of editing to do whatsoever.
It happens maybe once a month or so. So Scott, who just chimed in, as a constitutional lawyer of a libertarian bent, do you find yourself picking mostly or only stories which make points you want to make? Or, like I asked Jim, can you separate out yourself out from the story enough where you might write one on something the left might be right about? They are right occasionally.
Well, Tim, as a libertarian, I'm not afraid of calling them right. Well, actually, you know, I was going to answer in a completely
different
way.
Let's not go that far.
Well, no, you know what I was going to say? I was going to talk about free speech, and I recall so vividly when the left used to support free speech, and that's where my go-to kind of celebration of them can be. But the recent, history has shown us. So in recent history, I've learned that the left can't be counted on to support free speech, and that is quite troubling. But recent history aside, I would say that I support those, I get support, rather, from the left on those issues. So there are some issues, Tim, where it doesn't have to be an either or for me as a libertarian. There historically used to be almost as much push and pull from both sides of the aisle. Now, I will say that in addition to that free speech stuff, we've also seen a libertarianization, if you will, of the right. Whereas mm-hmm. the sort of evangelical pull, I think, towards those sort of cultural issues that the right seemed to be really wedded to in the past seemed to be breaking up in a way that is very attractive to, I think, libertarians, which is to say, if all you really want is small government and lower taxes, well, now you're talking up my alley. That's what I'm interested in.
What do we think about when there are issues that sort of cross the divide, such as civil liberty issues, civil liberties issues, police mistreatment of individuals, where it crosses from libertarian over to liberal? Are we in a position at Liberty Nation where we want to seek that common ground? There's few places of it these days, but are we trying to seek any kind of common ground with the left? Or do we really just have to call them out day after day after day, even if they occasionally lurch uncontrollably into doing the right thing? Anybody can take that one.
Well, when they do the right thing, we should recognize it. Absolutely. The problem is that so often, like, it's not so much a matter of just going after them and calling them out day after day. It's just when they're saying these things that threaten liberty, you have to call that out.
Period.
Yeah.
Hard. What do they call it at the
hard
end of a
stop.
Sentence? Hard stop.
Hard
yeah.
Stop.
Hard stop on that. Hard
yeah.
out. Yeah.
I would just say that, you know, every week, every Monday I come in and I say to myself, you know, I would think we're fresh out of topics. I mean, we just hammered free speech and we just went after, you know, the crazies who are going nuts over Trump. But, you know, they never disappoint. There's always some corruption. The Debbie Wasserman Schultz business with her tech guy from, was it Pakistan or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pakistan.
You know, then there's the Weinstein.
And Trump derangement syndrome will continue apace for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah. They never disappoint. It's like a plethora, a never-ending series of volleys coming at, I'd say, pretty much the ordinary American. And one of the things we do at LN is we have a series of banners that go in our articles. One says, Liberty Nation tells it like it is. And one says, oh, the tolerant left, you know, sort of making fun at them. I mean, the point is we
or
really
ignored by the mainstream media is another one,
yeah,
for example.
And our slogan is truth is making a comeback. I mean, does anybody remember the old days when they just used to get up there and read the news and tell you what was happening? I mean, why does there have to be a huge agenda? That is the problem.
Well, part of the problem with journalism today, and we've seen it over the years, we've been involved in it, Lisa, is that reporters don't really want to report anymore. And part of that is because they all aspire to be something more than just a reporter. But part of that also is the 24/7, 365 news cycle where everybody finds out everything right away. So there's not the value that there used to be in simply reporting something. So I think both of those things
are in play.
It
goes back to Woodward
they?
And Bernstein's byline. If those stories were not reported with their byline, I think we would have a different landscape for journalism. Because what you had was everybody wanted to be a star.
Right.
And then the local paper people didn't see that there was a lot of value in being a great local reporter. So then you have to aspire to be at the Post or the Times or the Journal, which is really not something that somebody should aspire to, I think.
Not anymore.
Really good writing on the local level is part of the decline of those newspapers.
So,
and by the way, let me just answer the question, if I might, as well, which is about the left when they sort of do something good, which is that, hey, if you're doing God's work, then we should celebrate that. And if you're not, then we should denigrate it, no matter who does it or who says it.
Jim, from an editorial standpoint, as you see it, what's the most single most important thing to report about the left these days? The single most important issue that Liberty Nation and like-minded organizations should be focusing on when it comes to the left?
Well, I think the biggest issue is, or at least the most important thing that we can do as far as focusing on the left, is pointing out the logical fallacies and or hypocrisy when they're pushing this statist collectivist narrative or you know, just any sort of factually incorrect story, which we see a lot of.
Really? I don't detect any bias in the establishment media. I must be reading something different. You saw this. You heard the silence. I was staggered that you would make such a statement. So, Lisa, what if someone asks you, Liberty Nation? They don't know anything about it. Is Liberty Nation pro liberty, or is it anti leftist? What's the orientation? If you could use just one or the other, which would you use?
I would use neither. I would say we're pro-truth. I think that what's happening in the media, you're right, there's so much of it. But at the same time, there's so little of it. Like you said at one point, there's 360,000 television stations, and there's nothing on.
It's amazing, isn't it?
I mean, that seems to be the problem. So every article has to have a slant when it's coming out of the mainstream, establishment, elite media. And what we try to do is say, let's come to the middle here. Let's see what the truth of the situation is and go from there. It doesn't have to be. Every time Donald Trump opens his mouth, it doesn't have to be a lie. It doesn't have to be denigrated. We can just kind of look at it for what it is. For instance, I think a lot of this happens in ignoring the good stories. Mm-hmm. For instance, immigration is a story that I think is very much ignored. You talk to people on the border, and they will tell you that there are far fewer crossings. You read the reports from the border control. People are being turned back or they're being arrested. I mean, even without a wall, the immigration system in this country has just gotten better. And that's without any new laws.
That's just the threat of actually simply enforcing the laws that are already on the books. We really don't need anything more than that. But, you know, one of the things is about Liberty Nation that's kind of unique is that we went live on Inauguration Day 2017, the day Donald Trump was elected. Not elected, but actually took office. And since then, in the, 8.5 months or so since then, I mean, it has been exhausting. I mean, you compare this to what it would have been like if we started in, say, Barack Obama's second term, where nothing happened.
It's enough to make you wish for a Bush, another Bush presidency. Low energy Jeb or whatever.
Low energy Jeb. Yeah, you're a real tough guy, Jeb. You're real tough. So it's just been an exhausting run. I mean, there's no let up. There's no let up in all the things that Trump is trying to do to drain the swamp and reconfigure what people expect out of a president. Speaks his mind, tweets like crazy on things that are relevant and things that appear to be irrelevant. But then the attacks from the left and the special counsel and the calling him white supremacist and all this stuff. I mean, Lisa, hasn't it just been exhausting? Whether you like Trump or not, it's been an exhausting run from Inauguration Day to now.
Well, it never seems to stop. I mean, how many articles do you think you edit a week, Jim?
Probably a good 7 or 8 a day.
There you go. So that's 50. That's in the average week, we're going to post 50, 60 things on LibertyNation.com. And that takes a lot of attention every single day and thinking ahead to what you want to publish and what people like to read on the weekend as opposed to during the week. What about you, Lisa? What do you think is the most important thing to report about and analyze on the left these days?
I think what's going on in college campuses is very disturbing, especially concerning free speech, that so many of them really don't value the free speech that they have. I think that there have been so many of the big people, the older people, the professors, the administrators, or in the case of NFL, the commissioner, these people seem very weak and unwilling to say what's right. And so I think what's going on with the millennials is very disturbing. I think what's going on with race in this country, we had a black president for two terms, and I think race has become a nightmare in this country like I haven't seen it since the 1960s. Jim?
Yeah. it's gotten crazy, especially on college campuses. You said so many people don't seem to value the free speech they have. I think, more importantly, they don't seem to value the free speech everyone else has. But yeah, it is insane that race, we're such a racist country. Well, we had a black president for 8 years, and he lived. So.
Well, then the argument really, Jim, has to be, doesn't it, that these people, since we are a racist nation, that these people that voted for Obama for 8 years became sort of recidivist racists. They changed their ways temporarily, but then in the 209 counties that voted twice for Obama and then voted for Trump in 2016, they reverted to their old racist ways. That would have to be the only argument
you
could make.
They're just more sexist than they are racist. They're like mildly racist, sexist.
Oh, way sexist, right, because Hillary Clinton said that that Barack Obama becoming the first black president was nothing compared to what it would have been to have a woman
president.
The
glass ceiling that she was prepared to smash down upon everyone's feet.
Yeah, is that glass ceiling still standing, actually, in New York?
Here's the problem. Most women in this country don't care about the glass ceiling. They don't acknowledge the glass ceiling. I think you have to be as old as Hillary Clinton to really get something out of that glass ceiling.
It's really sort of the aging 1960s, 70s eras feminists who are sort of graying and clinging to the agenda of 30 and 40 years
ago. She is graying, Tim, for sure.
What you just said, Lisa, is true, particularly for younger women. Because younger women don't, it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, they don't look at America through the prism of male versus female. They're getting the opportunities that women have been fighting for a long time. It's now part of our society.
I have
to
jump in here, Tim. It's the war against men is on in full force. If you look at who makes up undergraduate student populations, who makes up law school classes, who makes up med school classes, who are hiring at whatever the remnants of the big six accounting firms are, women lead the pack in all those areas because of affirmative action. Lest I sound like some sort of woke, racially identified person, I mean, it is the white male that is discriminated against openly in these areas in a way that other populations are not.
There you go with that toxic masculinity.
Yeah, for sure.
I thought it was toxic whiteness. Or is it both?
Probably both instance.
I see.
Apparently these days anything can be toxic.
Oh, new information. So we can declare anything toxic that we personally feel.
Well, we can't. We're white.
Yeah, I forgot about that part. Okay, well, so here we are, 8.5 months in. I got to ask you, Lisa, because this was your brainchild, Liberty Nation. There's where the idea was first spun up, and then we drew in the name of the radio show, Liberty Nation, that had been running for about 5 years. But so here we are, 8.5 months in. How has this gone compared to how you expected to go?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, I look at just the name of this podcast, and I see the usefulness of it. You know, ever since Donald Trump was elected, it's the resistance. And we call this the uprising because I believe that, you know, despite what they say about the Russians and all that nonsense, there was a populist uprising in this country, and that's what got Donald Trump elected. And I think not to acknowledge that or to try to say it was Comey or, you know, it was a bad hair day for Hillary or, you know, whatever. I think the American people aren't buying it.
There were digital farms in Eastern Europe, too, that were putting out fake news. You know, that was another reason. The Macedonian digital farms, that's another cause for Hillary's
Macedonian
loss.
Content farmers. Yeah.
There you go.
Right. In our About
With
Us page.
With pitchforks, I gather, since they're content
torches.
Farmers. Torches. There you go. That's it.
In our About Us page, I say that, you know, we're the marginalized. We are the people that, are called names. We all are in a political ghetto. If you're a Christian, you're in the Christian ghetto. If you're, a white, you're in the white ghetto, and on and on. So I think there is an uprising going on in this country that is not talked about. They talk about the resistance, but they don't talk about the uprising because they don't want to acknowledge that it exists, but it does.
And of course, that uprising, that populist uprising that you talk about in the U.S., is not limited to the U.S. It's happening in Europe, and we saw it with Brexit and the dramatic, game-changing withdrawal of Britain from the European Union. It shows, and you look at the results in France and other places where so-called nationalist candidates are doing better than they have in a long time, that this populist uprising against the global order is not limited to the U.S.
Andrew Breitbart lives in many places and in many ways and in every day on LibertyNation.com.
Well stated. So, final thoughts. Are we in the fight of our lives against the left, and are we winning? And let's talk, when I say we, let's put libertarians, conservatives, Republicans, populists, nationalists together into free market. Let's put it all into pro-free market. Are we in the fight of our lives, and are the free market forces winning or losing? Jim?
Well, I think it's sort of a cyclic battle. But I do think that the, for lack of a better way to put it, the more insane the progressive left gets, the better chances we have of winning.
Okay. Again, looking at it from the negative perspective of because they're so bad that we're bound to look good whether people think we're really good or not.
That may be kind of a messed up way of looking at it. We see it with Democrat politicians now pushing back and trying to distance themselves from Antifa. This is the beast they created, and it's gotten out of hand. And the more it gets out of hand, unfortunately, people can get hurt, but the more it gets out of hand, the more they're just destroying their own cause.
Fight of our lives, and are we winning? Scott, Lisa?
Maybe it's the fight of our lives. It's I've been
counselor,
in it. Well, I mean, I feel like I've been fighting since I've become an adult in this battle. Mm-hmm. And there's good cause to say that we're winning, and also that liberty's receding in certain areas. So the free speech front, we talked on the radio show. Or we'll talk on the radio show this week about the new survey that discusses how students don't respect their own rights to free speech. And so how can they respect ours if they don't respect their own? But in the same sort of, if you're doing the ledger, I think that for me, Tim, the greatest threat to our liberty in my lifetime has been the drug war. And we've seen with legalization, if you told me, 20 years ago that we would have a society today where in many states people can, legally use marijuana, I would say, well, that is a great boon to liberty. And so I think we have to celebrate, those wins where we can. And if we look today at the bump stock kind of controversy in terms of gun rights, we've also progressed quite nicely over the past 20 years. We're not at total freedom by any stretch, but we're a lot better than we were. So there's cause for optimism if we want to look for it.
Lisa?
I think November 8th, 2016 was a watershed moment for this country. I don't think Donald Trump...
Because it was my birthday, you mean?
Thought or, he was...
That election thing that happened.
I don't think he actually thought he was going to be elected, but... And I think Hillary Clinton and her minions thought she was going to be elected. But let me turn the tables on you for a second, Tim, and ask you. Since that election, we've had a number of special elections. What's happened in those?
Well, they have all gone the direction that the electorate went last November 8th. They've more, I would say the answer is that they've essentially reaffirmed what they voted last November 8th. And why shouldn't they? Because we're 9 months into this grand experiment with this president, unlike any we've ever seen, or, let's be honest, or are ever going to see again.
Well, I think the left's lack of acceptance doesn't bode well for them, because they keep pushing a narrative that is a non-reality in this country. So I would say that right now, the conservatives have the upper hand, but they have a real opportunity to blow it.
And based on the mainstream of the Republican Party, they're doing a pretty good job of blowing it, I would say, wouldn't you, Jim?
Absolutely. one of the big problems with the resistance is if you put yourself so firmly against Trump, then when he does something and it works and it's not terrible, then you only have two options. You can say, oops, I was wrong, or you can lie. That's it. And
or you can remain silent, but they never do that.
Yeah, I guess I should have said there are two things they're going to do, one of two things.
Right. Yeah. Well, that
there are other options, I suppose.
That's absolutely true. There's just a degree, it seems to me, of self-loathing on the left, a loathing of their own culture, of their own background, of their own country, of their own rights, of their own constitution. It's a self-hatred almost, a renunciation of everything that this country and their lives have apparently stood for. Is that too strong a statement? Anybody can jump in on that one.
No, it's Foucault and Derrida and the...
It's
Michel Foucault and Jacques Derrida and the rot that begins in the academia and the foundations for their ideology. And that's who they've adopted, this... is it neocolonialism or postcolonialism and deconstructionism?
There's colonialism is in there somewhere.
Right, yeah. Right. And so they've adopted a rotten foundation. And so therefore that, it you know, when the house topples over, to me it's no wonder why.
Well, thank all of you. Thank Lisa K. Donner, editorial director of Liberty Nation, and Jim Feit, associate editor, and Scott Cosenza, who has more titles than all of us, but we'll call him legal correspondent as a constitutional lawyer. Thank you all for sharing with us. This is The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com.